they wanted to execute him before their current batch of lethal injection drugs passed their use-by date, and they had to go and buy more. Which I think begs the question, when potassium chloride goes off, does it kill you better or worse? I don't know quite what happened. I mean, we'll never know. That's the real tragedy.
And welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host and our guest, propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. Today is episode 57 of Worst Foot Forward, just as there are apparently 57 varieties of Heinz products, as proclaimed on their ketchup bottles. And alongside me is my usually exuberant co-host, Ben Vandeveld, but if I'm going to get anything out of him today, I'm going to have to pick him up, turn him upside down, and shake him hard while smacking him on the bottom. Come on, Ben. Come on. Come on.
I love that you think I've got
there
that.
There it goes. It's all over my tracks.
Oh, mate. I can't believe you think I've got that resonant at the bottom.
You are definitely the resonant tone on this show.
Oh, no, I definitely am. But there's no way that smacking my bum would make that nice sort of fleshy sound.
How many varieties of Heinz product can you name?
Oh, God, that's a good question.
Ketchup and beans is as far as I've gotten.
Yeah.
They do soup.
Do they not do brown sauce? That's
oh,
HP.
Yes.
But HP is Heinz.
How much further do we have to go to get to 57?
53. Strapping listeners, we've got
Heinz boot polish.
Yeah, Heinz paint.
Heinz paint. Yeah, they've got white and black, so that's two.
Absolutely.
Heinz.
Marmite is actually a Heinz one in disguise.
That's right.
And
Hellman's mayonnaise is actually, it's the HE from Heinz. If you pull off the Ullmann's from it, there's actually got INZ behind it on the label.
You're making out that like Heinz is like,
it's this covert shadow or
brand. Heinz is the spectre of the food world.
that's definitely the fact. If you take anything from today's podcast, guys, is that Heinz are a shadowy, distrustful corporation. Please send us some free ketchup.
And their headquarters is inside a delicious volcano. When it explodes, beans just go everywhere.
Beans means world domination.
Now that we've revealed that massive conspiracy, which we missed out in our conspiracy episode, massive oversight, we should introduce our guest. Our guest this week, who is doing a lovely little dance to my right, comes all the way from New Zealand. He is a stand-up comedian with many garlands to his name. He has won 4 New Zealand Comedy Guild Awards, including Best Newcomer. He has been nominated for Best MC 3 times at the New Zealand Comedy Festival. He has worked closely with star Rhys Darby and been described in one of my favourite reviews of all time as an intellectual Fonz.
Squared plus B squared C squared.
I'm having that. I'm taking that.
That is astonishing. More pertinently for today's subject, he also trained as a criminologist, and his back catalogue, as well as including stories of love, mental illness, sex and drugs, also has a very crazy interview with a serial killer on death row. It is the very lovely and very funny Matt Stellingworth.
Hello.
Hello.
This is an organic start to a conversation.
Yes, it is.
Heinz, can you mention?
I'll be honest, I was sitting there, I was out of my depth on Heinz. They've not really come to New Zealand. Not really. We've got Watties dominate the sauce and baked beans market.
Okay.
And they make proper New Zealand baked beans where the beans ends with a Z, so it's got NZ on the end.
Oh, yeah.
Although, weirdly, Heinz ends with an NZ, doesn't it? Just normally.
But yeah.
Like, no, we're not taking
in a traditional German fashion.
Yeah.
So if you pull off the Watties label, it's got Heinz behind it.
I have a
it.
Feeling Watties might be the New Zealand name of Heinz.
Maybe Heinz own them.
Probably.
Yeah,
that
they
is
own
the
I'd
be honest, I don't have much sauce knowledge here. Worcestershire sauce is good.
Yes, it is.
Brown sauce is disgusting. I don't know what you're doing with
that.
Yeah,
what is that? That's not really a thing in
nowhere else but here.
Here, and more specifically,
it's like mushy peas and putting salt and vinegar on chips.
Salt and vinegar on chips is correct.
Right. Yeah,
no,
that's right.
Put tomato sauce on chips.
You do that after the salt and vinegar.
You can put salt, but keep your vinegar.
Well, it's been nice having you on the show, Matt.
Yeah. I didn't realise that was a big issue, right?
I've got a list
of things that's wrong with the United Kingdom.
Get to the back of the queue. I was here first.
Okay, yeah. Well, I actually had that the other day. I got mistaken for an Australian by an Irishman.
Oh, great.
And then I was like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I'm from New Zealand. And yeah. He goes, oh my God, man, I'm so sorry. because you hate the Australians the way we hate the English. And I was like, no, it is not the same at all.
It's not quite the
Australia
same,
yeah. never subjugated us. They never oppressed us with religion and politics. They just came over and cheated at some games. That's the extent of it.
The relationship is similar, both New Zealand to Australia and Ireland to Britain. You're kind of like the moon to Earth. Is how it is.
We like to think of ourselves as the Death Star to end. Please.
Yeah,
it's
like,
not a moon, that's a space station, Ben.
That is now soon going to be fully operational.
You just wait. We always ask every guest on our show what they're worst at in the world. What do you think that is?
I struggled with this because I think I'm quite bad at a lot of things. Mm-hmm. I think I might be the laziest person. I'm the worst at work on Earth.
Yeah, well, we had this chat. So Matt arrived 15 minutes early for today's show, which is...
Yes, because sitting here and doing nothing. I could have been writing comedy right up until... No, I do nothing. I have, since the past 3 months, I have started and watched almost every episode of The X-Files from season one onwards. Which is quite hard, to be honest, because those early seasons are pretty rough around the edges. I've just started.
It's mostly just Mulder and Scully trying to uncover the Hines conspiracy every time.
I know what's hard in this day and age is to go back and watch early 90s television, especially something like The X-Files, which is all based on, he doesn't have any proof, and just the entire first 6 seasons of The X-Files wouldn't work if cell phones were invented at that time. Every single episode and every single conspiracy could have been solved if someone had a camera phone or someone could have communicated with Mulder or Scully in that moment.
And the other thing is, well, they all have that slightly Vaseline-y on lens look that all those 90s programs do.
You realise how little money used to be in television in the pre-HBO era. Because I was watching the Blues Brothers the other day, and it's still amazingly HD. Like, and then I go on Amazon Prime and watch X-Files, and like the edges are blacked out because it hasn't been formatted to fit my TV screen yet. Still can't work out quite which one is Mulder and which one is Scully. No, I'm so lazy.
Yeah.
I do not. And I don't even watch new TV shows all day. I rewatch things that I've seen before because I'm too lazy to start something new because that would require an element of thought and engagement that I am not willing to put in.
I think I have a similar thing. I have a fear of sometimes starting new TV series. Yeah. So, like, I've been working my way through all the new Doctor Who from Christopher Eccleston onwards over the last few months. And as soon as I finish it, people are like, oh, you've got to get into what, this or that or whatever. And I'll go, yeah, they're on my list. And then I'll go, I'm just going to watch old episodes of Treasure Hunt with Annika Rice again from the gym. Or the Crystal Maze reruns, because I feel safe and I can watch these for weeks without having to, start a new thing.
Time Team. Oh, God. Oh, we don't really have it in New Zealand. Yeah. It's on all four. I'm on Time Team, man. I want to get T-shirts made up that just say, Trenches Before Wenches. Like a Time Team.
We should ask, because you trained as a criminologist. What does that actually mean?
Well, a criminologist, a lot of people, I think, assume they're like, it's a forensic scientist or something like that. It isn't. Although I have like spent some time with forensic scientists. Got to go to the
like
body
like Diane Fossey with the gorillas.
Yeah, that's a primatologist.
Oh. Right.
Actually, I did my honours in primatology, studying ring-tailed lemurs in Madagascar.
And then
I switched back to criminology.
Those tails look like prison wear.
maybe that's it. I didn't realise. I was looking at them every day, studying their cat immorality.
You went to Madagascar?
Yeah, I was studying ring-tailed lemurs, but then I went back to criminology because I was stuck between studying primates or ring-tailed lemurs.
I'm sure I read somewhere that lemurs are one of the few animals that also have a fingerprint. So, of course, there's a beautiful crossover there that you can solve lemur crime.
Lemur crime, yeah.
As do...
But then again, they all live in Madagascar as well. All lemurs are native too. So
much like, I think this crime was committed in Madagascar.
Yeah, they are endemic. They still don't know how they arrived there. They think the first old world monkeys from either... Actually, they used to think it was from Africa. They actually now think it came from India. Because at the time that they arrived in Madagascar, Madagascar was closer to what is now India than it was to Africa.
Well, it was all
and they arrived
the...
on like rafts from flooding and stuff, and then they're just entirely different from any other species on Earth.
I thought there was the large lemur communities in India, and then the lemur criminals got sent to Madagascar, and it was a prison colony.
Transportation.
That was
the first transportation reference of the day. does that mean then you just... You study criminal patterns.
It's a branch of sociology.
Okay.
You study criminality at large. So why do people commit crimes? Why do we punish crimes in this way? Do these punishments work?
Right.
Things like that, as opposed to a more like individual, like psychologist or psychiatric approach, which is. Like criminal minds, the behavioural analysis unit, which I did spend a couple of days with while I was travelling around, because I know some people who work there, and it is entirely bollocks. But even now, I still watch Criminal Minds, and I'm like, wow, I wonder how they're going to profile this guy, knowing that it is a science without any scientific backing whatsoever. No. They base all of their stuff on criminologists' work. They go, well, he's probably white... It's probably between 20 and 45, which describes almost every criminal on Earth, because criminals tend to age out of crime once you get towards 45. And he might have had a broken home. Oh, well done. Congratulations.
Really? So there's a retirement age for criminals that's slightly older than the average retirement age for a professional footballer.
Yes.
Once they're 45, they go into coaching roles and sort of director of crime.
Into the Legends League.
Yeah.
Doing exhibition crimes.
put in charge of women's prisons with no qualifications whatsoever. There was a football reference I made there. I've been paying attention. I've been studying the local culture.
But no, the way to catch a criminal is to engage the services of a criminal. That's the really glamorous way. You get a murderer out of prison to go, who is this murderer committing all these crimes?
Exactly, and then you make a show.
Have you ever done that?
No, I've interviewed, like I said, serial killers and mass murderers and mob hitmen
in Death Row,
like that.
In USA.
Yeah, in Texas.
Cool.
Texas,
like face to face with the telephones and the screen.
No, face to face in a room without the screen.
Cool.
Yeah,
is he still alive?
That's how you're allowed to chat to them, because you know the screen sort of is a breakdown in communication. It stops the personal connections. You don't learn as much.
Is he still? I'm assuming it's a he, because most death row criminals are. Is it?
Almost exclusively, yes. And almost exclusively white, in between 20 and 45. Boom. Some of them are still alive. One of them actually invited me to his execution.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is a weird Facebook invite to get, isn't it?
That's RSVP ASVAP.
That's a maybe. You don't want to say no, that's rude, but saying yes and not showing up, you know. Yeah, no.
Do you need me to bring anything?
Yeah. Bring some sausage rolls. We're putting on a spread for all the...
Well, sausage rolls, you can cook them on his chair as he's being electrified.
Well, he went by.
Not in Texas anymore, mate.
Yeah.
I might tell you about that in a minute.
All right.
Oh, yeah, you've got your research.
I've got some electric chair stuff for you.
They do still have electric chair. Although most don't choose it for what would seem the obvious reason. the electric chair is, by most accounts, a better way to go than lethal injection, which has a significant history of cock-ups.
Yeah.
A lot. Oh. And it should be pointed out, the British people can't sort of take the moral high ground here, because the company that makes lethal injection drugs
is based
in Britain.
Of course
and is,
it is.
And is currently the defendant, I think, about 40 different lawsuits of their drugs not working properly.
Yeah.
Part of that, of course, has to go to the people who administer them, because most of them aren't medical professionals, because you can't compel a medical professional. That breaks the Hippocratic Oath. Mm. So it's volunteers. which I would like to take a moment to explain. Why are we not investigating people who volunteer to kill people?
Yeah, it's all one and good blaming them, but it is, as you say, the company's fault. That company, yeah, of course, being Heinz.
Yeah. The three drug cocktail, we're now up to 11 different drugs.
We are going to talk today about the world's worst punishment, using Matt's insight into the worlds of capital punishment. But we're going to start with Ben. Ben has been looking at some particularly gruesome stuff. Oh, by the way, at the outset, we're going to put a little trigger warning at the start of this episode, because some of the things we talk about today might be slightly graphic. So if you think you are of a slightly squeamish nature and don't want to hear about people being eaten by insects, well, now's the time to turn off.
Yeah, definitely. When I started researching this, we're depressingly spoilt for choice when it comes to punishments. Like,
inventive, aren't we?
Yeah, like, you know, when you look at history and go, we live in an astonishingly peaceable time in terms of warfare and murder rates, and there's very little disease compared to the rest of history. Mm. And then you forget just how, not just how cheap life was, but how much people delighted in really hurting other human beings. And also because there's still so much death penalties around the world, there's, I think it's about 60 countries have got the death penalty, and it's hanging and stoning, and stoning's horrible because it's burying someone in the ground up to their chest and wanging stones at their head till they die.
Yeah, I didn't realise it was the burial bit to it. I thought
that was tied up. I was the same until they showed us a video of it at university to study it. Yeah, because my only experience and exposure to it up until that point was Monty Python.
Of course.
the size of the stone is dependent on the severity of the crime that you committed. The more severe, the smaller the stone. The less severe, you get the biggest guy in town with one big stone.
Just Bobo drops a stone on your head
relatively quickly.
Iran's penal code has rules about the size of the stone. In the case of adultery, the stone, it says specifically, the stone should not be so big as to kill with one or two throws, but not be so small as to not be called a stone.
So no pebbles.
So yeah,
if you turn up with a bag full of gravel, back of the queue.
Yeah, before a stoning in Iran, there's probably like an intellectual debate about it. Is it a stone? Is it a pebble? Is it a small rock? Yeah,
everyone lining up. They've got one of those school things with the different coloured holes in it. You have to pass it through.
Yeah. So I decided to go into history to sort of detach myself from the horror. So the first thing I did is I went to East Asia, because, gosh, they like destroying the human form. And there are various different forms of impalement that I looked at. Now, obviously, Vlad the Impaler, very, very famous for sticking people, and he'd go through their hip, out through their shoulder, so you wouldn't die of the wound, you would die of exhaustion and dehydration. Yeah. And
you were being worn at a jaunty angle.
Yeah. And Vlad stuck 40 to 80,000 people around his castle as like a wall of humans, partially as like like the biggest human shield in history, and also just as wanting to go and look what I've done to these guys, and I don't really feel strongly either way about them.
They're my citizens.
Yeah.
Imagine what I'll do to you lot.
But there's loads of different variations of this as an execution. But the one that I really disliked that I found in East Asia was that the victim would be securely tied in place above a young bamboo shoot.
Oh,
and because bamboo grows so quickly, that this sharpened bamboo will just grow through their body and out of their body in another indeterminate place.
Yeah, I was reading, I think I read an article about that, and it said there's some myths about, well, there's some legends that maybe the Japanese did it to US POWs during the Second World War, which are, they're not necessarily true, but certainly it seems to have happened in a few places like Sri Lanka. And this article said, you know the way you read these articles about facts, and then they'll go, but then on an episode of Mythbusters, so-and-so did an experiment, and it turned out this wouldn't have happened. I read a sentence which began, on an episode of Mythbusters, like, here we go. They did this test with like a gelatin made to the same sort of density of the human body. And I was like, yeah. And yes, indeed, the bamboo pierced it. And I was like, what? I mean, it actually worked. It's the first I've ever read one of those sentences.
Yeah, and then the little reference on the Wikipedia, down to, Mythbusters cancelled after horror episode.
Yeah. Well, that's
first time experiment goes right.
Yeah.
That's what actually happened to Richard Hammond. He didn't crash a car. He was just a bamboo voodoo doll.
That's a great Cure track, isn't it?
Bamboo voodoo doll, yeah. A couple of punishments that get points for artistic merit. The Vikings are great for this. Do you know about the Blood Eagle?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, it's astonishing. Do you know about this?
I have heard of the Blood Eagle, but I can't wait for the details to be read to me so, on the Monday morning.
Yeah. Jimmy Viking would get his broadsword. He'd cut two large gouges either side of your spine. Mm. They'd then crush you and break your ribs, reach inside, grab your lungs, and pull them out of your...
out your back.
Out your back.
Yeah.
You just wish they'd have heard of snow angels.
The guy who invented the snow angel that was the death knell for the
for the bloody eagle.
Meanwhile, they'd inspired centuries of heart surgery. Yeah. Rib-breaking techniques. A bunch of surgeons go, that's how you get in there. We were wondering how you did it.
Yeah, you just see kind of like scalpel, blood axe. Thanks very much.
It essentially is, if you've ever seen heart surgery. It's a pretty gruesome, yeah.
Oh, to get through the sternum and the rib cage.
Sore throat. Yeah, my wife's done it. She can't eat ribs anymore. Smells very similar.
Jesus.
A bizarre apparatus that I found. Have you heard about the Spanish donkey?
No.
Yeah, no. I tried to find the most esoteric torture device I could.
I've heard of the golden bull is the one.
No,
that's the Greek one, isn't it?
That's the just put you in something
in a
and
copper
heat
bull
it.
And heat it. Yeah.
The fact that it was a bull was that was just an extra flourish that sculptor was like, we just need a barrel to put them in to put a fire under. And he's like, well, I think we can do something.
I've got a rejected bull from a Minoan king didn't want this one.
Someone goes, is that a bull? And he's like, shut up, or I'm sensitive about it. Then they put one outside of Wall Street in what's described they're like serial killers putting a trophy outside. Like, we are psychopaths, so we've put a Persian torture device.
Yeah, and they actually, when they filmed The Wolf of Wall Street, Leonardo DiCaprio went in there so he could go full method. Just Jonah Hill lighting a fire underneath him. Since you mentioned the Brazen Bull. It was
Brazen Bull,
designed by Perillaus of Athens in the year 560 BC, so thankfully a hell of a long time ago. Perillaus was a blacksmith from Athens, and he proposed it to Phalaris, who was the tyrant of a city in Sicily, as a new means of executing criminals. Mm. But basically,
bulls are very sacred in particularly Mediterranean culture at the time.
And the tyrant was, when he saw it, was so disgusted by the brutality of the invention, he put the inventor inside and killed him in it.
Wow.
And apparently later on, Phalaris was overthrown by a guy called Telemachus, and he was then put inside the bull.
Wow.
So there's a beautiful circularity to that story.
There is a beauty in finding out some of the inventors of these punishments, because they tend to fall by the wayside and you never really know. And there is some interesting people that need to be researched, because the creativity of some of them, you're like, what else did you get up to in your life that this was an invention that you stumbled upon in your working life? He wasn't the chief torturer who was looking for a new way to do his job.
He's one of those ones where you go, you know, the way some things are invented by accident in history. I've accidentally invented a hollowed out bull you can roast people alive in.
He was just a talented amateur. That was it. It was like, you know, in the FA Cup third round of torture, he was the non-league team full of punishment. The wooden horse sounds like something that should be an apparatus in Olympic gymnastics, but what it was used by the Spanish military in the 17th century.
So it's a Spanish horse, sorry.
The Spanish donkey.
Spanish
or the wooden
donkey
horse.
Or wooden horse. Okay, cool.
So the victim is stripped naked. They're brought along. They are forced to straddle this apparatus, which is basically a vertical wooden board with a sharp V wedged on the top. And then weights are attached to the offender's ankles and pulling them down onto the wedge until eventually they are split in two.
Jesus.
I'm really feeling good about the topics that I'm going to bring up. Yeah. You've really plumbed the depths of humanity.
Those are the nicer ones.
I know. Well, that's it. Yeah, mine is still in use. So therein lies the
difference.
These
have been retired,
I'm going to just give two more versions of one thing before I tell you about my selection. There's one which comes from medieval Sweden. Who knew that the Swedes could be fucked up?
Yeah.
But the Swedes had a method of capital punishment called the Cave of Roses.
Cave of Wonders.
Yeah.
Sounds which like a Mills and Boone. Yeah. You're going to the Cave of Roses, like, ooh.
Yeah, where Annika and Agentha just hump you to death for hours on end. So what would happen is that inside the dark cave, there would be a huge variety of venomous creatures, and you would basically be placed inside it. They'd seal up the cave and go, good luck to you, pal. That went on for about 500 years from the 13th century until it was finally abolished in 1772. And props to Sweden, they were the first major European nation to ban the death penalty completely.
Well done, then.
Well done, then. But then it's also the sort of thing with Sweden where you go, oh, you're lovely and very liberal and forward-thinking, but also eugenics. So you've got that same thing going on. And I think the Cave of Roses is a more modern version of a Roman punishment that I found called Pina Colada.
Pina Colada.
Not Pina Colada.
It's where you get caught in the rain.
Yeah. And there's no escape.
No escape.
And you creepily try and cheat on your wife.
Yes.
But then it's a love story because you realised you were both trying to bone someone else. So, hey, let's go drink cocktails.
Pina Colada is called the penalty of the sack. And I'd love to tell you it's just being kicked in the balls for 10 minutes, but it's not. It's very similar to the Cave of Roses, but it's where you are sewn up inside a leather sack with an assortment of live animals and then thrown into the water. And normally the animals in it were a cat, a dog, a cock, a monkey and a viper. So it was essentially death by riddle.
The viper is definitely the bounty bar in that box of celebrations. Yeah. The rest of them you could kind of take.
And they executed an old woman and they were like, there's a song in this. It felt like after the viper, they were just taking the piss on like, what else should we put in there? I don't know. Although I have to say, going back to the Swedish one, venomous creatures in Sweden seemed like it's the best place on earth. In a cave with a spider that gives you an itch. And what else is there? It wouldn't work in Australia. It'd be a nightmare.
Well, no, wasps, but only in the summer.
And as long as you're allergic.
Well, in Australia, you'd be dead within 3 seconds. The Cave of Roses is the most humane capital punishment in Australia.
In fact, Cave of Roses is the ancient name for Australia.
Yeah. Yeah, you just go in there and there's a duckbill platypus on the door with a scythe going, welcome to the cave.
They're venomous.
But not to us, I believe.
No, they've got little spiky things.
Oh, but I thought they had a thing that their spikes can't puncture human skin.
Oh, maybe, I don't know, maybe they can't puncture us, but I think you probably wouldn't want to drink their poison.
No, not really. Oh, I should say for the penalty of the sack, it went on for hundreds of years in Rome, and it was mostly associated with patricide.
Yeah.
But it then got it disappeared and then got reinstated again in medieval Germany. But the Germans were a little bit nicer. They'd stick you in a sack full of live animals, but the animals were in different compartments and they only put in a picture of a viper. Which I think is a really passive aggressive.
When was this?
This was in the 18th century in Saxony.
So the Germans really had an about turn over the next 150 years when it came to capital punishment.
Happy Holocaust Memorial Day, Barry.
Maybe that's what they did in Sweden. They just put pictures of other countries' venomous animals in the cave, and you just had to sit there looking at them. Going,
thank God I live in Sweden. Yeah. So which is your suggestion then?
So my suggestion, I'm going back to China, it's the death by a thousand cuts.
Oh my god, it's so terrible. Oh no.
It's horrifying.
I was reading about it and then like the page suddenly threw up a photo of someone having it done to them. I was like, oh.
It's really gruesome. So it was used in China for about 900 years from the 11th century to the start of the 20th century. Yeah. It was only reserved for the harshest of crimes. And what you would do is you would tie someone to a stake and then just remove pieces of flesh bit by bit over about 20, 30 minutes until the person would, just die from not being there anymore, from blood loss.
Yeah.
There's quite a lot
shock.
Of... And shock. There's quite a lot of suggestion that actually, after the first couple of cuts, if they were near the heart, you'd be unconscious.
Yeah.
And then they just administer a coup de grace.
Yeah.
And the reason it came from is it came from Confucius, who we normally associate with being a lovely, forward-thinking kind of chap. But his principle of filial piety, because it was a punishment for killing your brother, that to alter one's body or to cut the body is considered an unfilial practice. So if you kill your brother, then body alteration, I guess that includes tattoos or piercings or all that shit, that sort of destroys the honour of your body and the honour of your soul. And it's weird, the history of death by a thousand cuts, because it was sort of used as Western propaganda for how barbarous China was and justifying us taking them over as part of our empire. And it's a tricky one to look at, because obviously they did do it for 800 years, but we can't really have the moral high ground as Westerners because we boiled people in oil.
Yeah, that's true.
But
I did read that sometimes they gave people, if they did it over a longer period, if it was sort of a matter of hours or days even, rather than the half an hour, that they'd sometimes give the victims opium to ease the pain a little bit. Or as you say, someone would sort of go, okay, I'll just slice near the heart and put them out of their misery early doors. Yeah.
What's so weird about it, and what really sort of struck a chord, there's loads of them that about breaking and rending and snapping and twisting and all that. Like there was
like push pops.
Yeah. Oh god! There's a lot of execution that look like medieval versions of Bop It. But there was one other one that I looked at, which is sawing, which is where you'd be hung upside down by your legs and sawn in half through your genitals, and because all the blood would pump to your head, you'd be alive all the way through it. Huh. But this is the nearest that a human being will get to being eaten alive with a knife and fork.
Yeah.
And it's just terrifying. And just because it's so goddamn horrible, I'm choosing Ling Chi, Death by a Thousand Cuts, as my world's worst punishment.
I've sort of gone, I would argue as barbaric, perhaps, but in an era in which we should know better. I've chosen capital punishment as it is implemented in the United States of America to this day. Because we talked a lot about, you know, things that happened thousands of years ago and how barbarous they are, but I'm sticking with the 21st century as my example of the worst punishment. So I actually studied capital punishment. I studied the death penalty in America was what my doctorate was on. And
you think it works, first of all? I mean, it kills the criminal, but
you divide punishments into general deterrence and specific deterrence.
Yeah.
Obviously, the death penalty is a fantastic specific deterrent because that person is unlikely to commit crimes again.
Yeah.
But as a general deterrent, it actually doesn't work.
Yeah.
And this has always been my problem with it, because I sort of looked at it and I don't particularly have a huge moral problem with it, but I do have a moral problem with it, but I think arguing the morality of it is not going to change policy, is it? So I argue the facts of it, and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
There was one study that famously came out that he said for every person they execute in America, they save 6 other lives.
Right,
and this was the thing, because it scares people away from being murderers, was his theory. But he actually, the theoretical mathematical framework he used to come up with this one, you have to make an educated guess. And people have studied his workings and have found, if you make a very slightly different educated guess, you can get anywhere from it saves 86 lives per execution to it causes the death of an extra 422 people per execution.
That is a wide
range. So essentially he's saying, you know, every person we execute could either kill another 420 people or save 86 somewhere in between there. And you'll notice in those numbers, the median is tending towards it causes more problems. And people have known this for a long time, because it used to be in the 17th and 18th century when sort of criminology and sociology first began. Capital punishment was a punishment for lots of things.
Yeah.
And people first started to sort of notice this thing of brutalization, which is theory. If theft is punishable by the death penalty, then killing the person you stole from and eliminating a witness or someone to catch you, if that gets you the same punishment.
Yeah.
So the more, if all crimes have the death penalty, the more extreme the crime, the less chance you have of being caught.
Right? Yeah.
And that was actually one of the origins of punishment, was Jeremy Bentham, a great British scientist and philosopher.
The one who's in the cabinet.
Who has been stolen on several occasions by students. He came up with a thing, he called it the hedonistic calculus, which is how one should decide punishments. And he sort of based the idea being that human beings are basically rational actors, and that if a crime generates you 7 units of pleasure from doing that crime, then the punishment should be 8 units of pain.
I think I've spotted the key flaw in Bentham's theory there.
Rational actors has long been the problem. In fact, yeah, it was...
There's no such thing as a rational actor.
Yeah, it's been about 200 years since anyone in the scientific community, except economists, weirdly enough. They still theorise that people are rational actors, but they really aren't. The first criminologist, you might argue, called Cesare Beccaria, argue that the death penalty didn't work because death was an unknown. It's an abstract. We don't know what happens after we die. Uh-huh. So in that way, so it's like not going, a very good punishment.
Do you want prison or the mystery box?
Yeah. And in 17th and 18th century Europe, you're essentially saying, you know, do you want prison or the afterlife? If everyone believes in an afterlife,
of course, yeah,
and you believe that forgiveness is available for all, then death is not actually a huge punishment, particularly combined with the torture that we know the medieval mind was capable of creating.
True, but in that age, most people will have been taught that they're going to hell. So surely that isn't... I mean, obviously, if you're an amoral criminal, then that probably doesn't hold too much of a worry.
Depends what
for
branch
you.
Of, well, if you're a Protestant and you're one of those who believe that we're already preordained to either go to heaven or hell, you might go, well, it doesn't really matter what I do, does it?
Yeah, but that's pretty cocky if you're a criminal and you've committed murder and go, yeah, but I'm predestined to go to heaven.
Yeah, that's it. That's what they believe in, predestination. Calvinists, I think.
Yep, that's what they believe in, double predestination.
I can kill as many people as I like and I'm going to walk into heaven. They'll be like, why are you here? Predestination, mate. I'm on the guest list.
Just God sitting there going, I hate the day I committed that.
We have to let him in here. He's good for business. He's got a lot of Instagram followers.
Yeah, what does his Instagram look like? Clouds, more clouds.
He's an opinion maker.
So we knew it didn't work even then, and it still doesn't work to this day. And the reason I bring up America is America's about the only developed nation on Earth that still has the death penalty. Mm. The only people that execute the same or more people than them are Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, China, and North Korea, which is not a list that I think any country really wants to be on. Like, the top five.
But also, funny that in a such a secretive country, one of the statistics we do know about North Korea is how many people they execute. Yeah. They're like, yeah, we're fine with letting people know this thing.
Yeah, well, I think we can estimate that they execute at least as many people as America, just based around the backgrounds of photos of Kim Jong-un. You see enough horrific stuff happening in the background, and then we can add up.
Well, and also because the personnel changes so often, you're like, yeah, they're definitely dead now. In terms of developed nations, Japan's probably the other famous one that's got the death penalty, but they don't really use it that often.
No, they don't use it. And to be fair, quite a few American states don't have it. Mm. Although, that said, the federal government still have it. They still execute people in federal prison. They execute soldiers and people like that. And they actually got rid of it, oddly enough. They put a moratorium on capital punishment at about the same time that everyone else on Earth did.
Yeah. There was a couple of botched...
there's been botched ones for years, and they still are to this day.
Yeah.
Like a couple of examples, for example, they used to execute by gas chamber into the 90s, which you would have thought World War II would have really given the gas chamber enough of a bad rep that no one else is going to use it. Should we use something the Nazis made famous? No, that's a bit on the nose. I don't think we should do that.
I bet they rationalise it going, yeah, but we're just executing one person at a time.
Yeah.
Well, they used it up until it was 1995, I believe, was the last one. It was in Arizona. And it took more 22 minutes for him to die.
Jesus Christ.
And because they just put them in a little room. Yeah. And they just sort of stood there and they turned on the gas and they were supposed to fall asleep and nice be the end. But it wasn't. He ended up 22 minutes of writhing as the skin melted off his face from these horrible chemicals.
Oh, Christ.
Utah still has death by firing squad.
That's right, yeah.
Which is it's actually a weird talking about religion. That was Utah's the home of Mormonism, and Mormons still have a thing called blood atonement. The idea being that if you spill blood, if your blood is spilt, then you have paid for your crime. So if you're a devout Mormon, but not devout enough to not murder someone.
Yeah.
But so 2010, I think, was the last death by firing squad. And the way it's supposed to be done, so all of these sort of have a fallback whereby it legally protects executioners.
Yeah.
So, for example, by lethal injection, you have three lines put in. Two have saline, one has the three-drug cocktail.
Yeah.
And in death by firing squad, there are six police marksmen. Five have bullets, one has a wax round. So no one will know who had the wax round. Although in the autopsy of this man who was executed by firing squad in Utah in 2010, which they have to legally do an autopsy, by the way, and the coroner has to put cause of death as homicide when they do them. Yep.
He was killed with five very sharp bamboo.
Very quick going. Yeah. Very quick going. But over the course of the autopsy, he found six rounds in him.
Oh.
And an investigation found that so rarely did they execute by firing squad that the local police department didn't have any wax rounds. And they couldn't be bothered buying any because they had to buy in bulk.
Yeah,
they're a government
organisation.
So they just gave everyone real live
Jesus
rounds.
Jesus Christ.
And this happened a lot. The state of California was actually sued by the federal US government in 2013 because it was found that they tried to rush through the final appeal of a death row inmate because they wanted to execute him before their current batch of lethal injection drugs passed their use-by date.
Inspiring.
And they had to go and buy more. Which I think begs the question, when potassium chloride goes off, does it kill you better or worse? I don't know quite what happened. I mean, we'll never know. That's the real tragedy.
I mean, the use by date only means that you're not allowed to sell it in the supermarket anymore. Obviously, as we all know with food, it's still, you know, effective.
Yeah. You walk around City Hall and there's boxes of it with like those little like cut out like Starburst things in like your local
now
corner score.
Three for a pound.
Past use by date, but still good. It still stops the heart.
Yeah. The lethal injection's a real problem at the moment, isn't it? Because there's been these issues about whether it's as humane as it's made out to be, and batches not being suitable. And
yeah, well, they've taken to using a similar sort of ECG, like measuring brain waves, that they first started to use to detect intraoperable awareness.
Yeah.
You know, it was the sensation of you get knocked out for surgery, but you are still fully aware.
Yeah.
So people report still being, like, they, you know, they're still aware and they're like, they can still hear, but they can't move, they can't open their eyes, and they feel the incision of the scalpels.
Mm.
So they started measuring people's brain waves, and they've started doing this, and they've found a lot of problems of extreme pain. And people who put in the lines miss the veins. And it's actually, potassium chloride is very corrosive, so it eats away at people's arms.
Which has led to, if you like, problems for a lot of states because they don't have a backup method of execution. So they can't execute people because they've all, for so long, gone, oh, lethal injection's the best way, we've hit on it. And they've made the electric chair illegal or whatever. And there's Alabama, Florida, South Carolina, Kentucky, Virginia, and Tennessee are the only ones where you can have electric chair by choice. You can choose it if you like, instead of a lethal injection. But I think even Nebraska has said, oh, the chair is cruel and unusual punishment, and lots of other states don't allow it. So if you can't inject someone, you're kind of a bit stuck.
Yeah, well, oddly enough, we struck on the best one centuries ago. It's hanging appears to be the best and most humane one. There's quite a skill to it. Have you seen Pierpoint, the film?
Oh, yeah.
The great Timothy Spall one?
Which, by the way, great fact, was written by comedian Bob Mills.
Really?
Yeah.
The comic wrote that?
Yeah.
Albert Pierpoint was the last hangman in Britain.
Yeah.
It was a weirdly, like, a family tradition that no one else in the family knew until his father retired.
Yeah.
Became a celebrity for executing Nazis.
Yes, that's right.
Which is weird because, going back to the States, they actually had a moratorium on it in 1972. They had a Supreme Court case called Furman v. Georgia, that argued that it broke the Constitution. Basically, the 8th and 14th Amendment. The 8th Amendment protects American citizens from cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah.
And the 14th Amendment was equal protection under the law. Because they argued that even from county to county, people would get completely different punishments. So in one town, he got 15 years in prison. The same crime, two towns over, got the death penalty. So they put a moratorium on it.
Yeah.
So people couldn't be executed, which is, for example, why Edmund Kemper, the famous serial killer, who's the inspiration for Mindhunters, if you've seen the great episodes, yes. He's only alive now because he was caught in 1973 during this four-year moratorium on it. And that's about the same time the rest of the world was getting rid of capital punishment. The rest of the developed world was the
The guillotine was still in operation until about that time.
Until about 72, I think, might have been the last time. Yeah, and then it's like we got through World War II. We got through executing all of the Nazis. And then we thought, yeah, we've probably done enough of this executing stuff. I think they were the only ones left that were really bad enough for it. But then, yeah, 4 years later in Grigsby, Georgia... it was another 5-4 decision by the Supreme Court. They overturned that moratorium on it because the lawyers in Georgia had proved a thing called super due process, which they said because of the number of appeals you were allowed and the number of investigations, that never again would it be wrongly, would someone be wrongly executed, and it wouldn't be cruel and unusual, it wouldn't be unevenly applied.
I mean, that's a case that seems like it needs to be revisited.
Yes. Well, yeah.
Not with the current Supreme Court maker.
Yeah. Yeah. Within 6 months, I think that had been proven folly.
Yeah.
You know, for example, the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Coloured People, they wanted to put together a study, and they wanted a big, catchy headline with an amazingly high number to show the differences between the number of black people executed for murdering white people and the number of white people executed for murdering black people in Georgia, right? So they were expecting it to be like 12 times more. So they'd say, you know, if you are a white man who a black man who murders a white man, you'll be 12 times more likely to be executed than a white man who kills a black man. But they couldn't make that statistical comparison because in the history of the state of Georgia, they couldn't find an example of a white person killing a black person and being given the death penalty.
Whoa.
So you couldn't even make a nice statistical analysis because it was infinity percent more times.
Jesus Christ.
With all these cases as well, the phraseology of the American Constitution fascinates me. Cruel punishment, I understand that. In a court of law, how do you define unusual punishment?
Well, their argument was the unusual punishment was the... basically, they equated it to being struck by lightning, was catching the death penalty. And it was unusual in that you couldn't say for certain whether someone committing the same crime would get it or not. Was essentially the argument.
So it wasn't like being pecked to death by a goose wearing ballet slippers
It's
more like irregular punishing.
The unusual, just that's kind of a cute thing. Unusual punishment.
Yeah.
Tarring and feathering.
Yeah.
Weirdly, tarring and feathering is not allowed anymore because it's an unusual punishment. But execution by the electric chair, no, that's fine mate. Yeah. That's fine. It's a very peculiar thing. And again, it doesn't work. It doesn't stop people from murdering, especially now, because the average stay, depending on which state you're in, on death row is between 11 and 19 years. And it is significantly more expensive than keeping someone locked up for prison for life. There was a great study in North Carolina where they said if we took everyone on death row now and put them on in prison life without the possibility of parole, it would save the state about $50 million a year.
Jesus Christ.
It's really expensive to keep your own separate wards for death row. They're allowed as many extensive appeals all the way up to the Supreme Court. For example, the cost of running the death penalty in California is like over $15 billion. And in that time, given the number of people they've executed, the average cost to the taxpayer in California per executed Californian prisoner is $320 million, which means for every single person executed in California, the state of California could have paid to produce the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy.
I read a little bit about American execution methods, particularly about the electric chair. So the invention of the electric chair is amazing. Do you know about the War of Currents?
Oh,
so in the 1880s,
raisin-based war.
Five people had bullets, and one person just had a raisin. In the 1880s, there was this whole debate about whether current should be direct current or alternate DC or AC, or alternating current. So Edison was sort of proposing direct current, and George Westinghouse was the sort of the guy who was pushing alternating current. And so any time there was a death in public because of like falling electricity lines or something, electricity going wrong, whichever side it was who had made the mistake, the other side would be like, you see, alternating current kills people. Or look, direct current killed that child when he played under those lines that day.
It's Apple versus PC, but with much higher stakes.
Exactly. And so there was then this whole thing about which should be used. There was this idea of executing people using electricity was being bandied around, and both sides were going, well, which of us are going to be the one to get the big execution contract? I think it was the state of New York was particularly looking at it. And so Edison carried out tests on horses and calves using his alternating current, sort of between 1,000 and 1,500 volts to see if they would kill people. But I say using alternating current because alternating current was actually his opponent's method. But he'd go, look, it's killed a calf. I've used this amount of electricity in it, and this is half the amount of electricity that's in the AC lines on your street today. So he was actually going, look, it can kill a wild animal bigger or an animal bigger than a human being, and twice that much electricity is flowing through those dangerous power lines in your neighborhood. So, and then Westinghouse accused him of defaming him, and there was a whole commission set up to look at this this death penalty using electricity, and they had a chair made, but again they got Edison to do it, but he used like one of Westinghouse's alternating current transmitter things so that Edison could say he'd made the thing that killed this guy when they eventually use it, but if it went wrong he could blame it because it was Westinghouse's invention that he'd been using in the chair.
I mean, so it's like Bill Gates just beating someone to death with an iPad. See, they are dangerous.
So the first execution by electric chair was a guy called William Kemmler, who murdered his wife, and he was put the chair in on August the 6th, 1890, and it took 8 minutes in total because they put 1,000 volts through him and discovered it had just made him unconscious, and then it took the next 7 minutes to recharge the machine before they could put 2,000 volts through him, where his skin was rupturing, he was bleeding. And Westinghouse said they would have done better using an axe, and a reporter who was there said it looked far worse than hanging, and yet, you know, they still went ahead and kept doing it. There was a famous case in 1946 involving a guy called Willie Francis, who they electrocuted him, and apparently didn't electrocute him enough, because while he was there being literally fried in the chair, which was called, they all have these cool nicknames, called Gruesome Gertie, he shouted, "Take it off, let me breathe!" And it turned out that he was taken out and he was alive, and it turned out the chair had been set up by a drunk guard and inmate. It's in 1946. And so then his lawyers argued a case all the way to the Supreme Court saying, well, he's been executed. He's still alive, but he's been executed, so his punishment's been carried out, guys.
That's the classic, if the rope break or the trap door breaks three times, then God wants you to live.
Yeah. Well, they also said, oh, it would violate the sort of the principle of double jeopardy if he was sent to the chair again. The Supreme Court did not agree with this, and he was executed again in 1947. I read about some similar old gruesome punishments to you, Ben. Have you heard of blowing from a gun?
Oh, I think so. This is a like Napoleonic War or American Civil War.
No, it seems to be much more, actually more common, originating in the Mughal Empire in India in the 1500s, and was very widely used, particularly in Asia, up until the 1930s. It may have been used a little bit in Europe, but it particularly seems widespread in Asia. I've got a description of it here. The prisoner is generally tied to a gun, with the upper part of the small of his back resting against the muzzle. When the gun is fired, his head is seen to go straight up into the air, some 40 or 50 feet. The arms fly off right and left, high up in the air, and fall at perhaps 100 yards distance. The legs drop to the ground beneath the muzzle of the gun, and the body is literally blown away altogether, not a vestige being seen. And the last time that was used was in Afghanistan in 1930, so, you know, quite recent.
That said, all of that time we were using like hung, drawn, and quartered doing a much more long-winded way to do the same thing.
It's the industrialised version of hung, drawn and quartered.
Which really, hung, drawn and quartered was famous for not working very well.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a great book called Discipline and Punish by a sociologist called Michel Foucault, and just to be a really weird, like, required university readings, begins the first two pages of the book are a diarist's account of the execution of Damien's the regicide, or attempted regicide, who attempted to kill the king.
Yeah.
And they tried to quarter him and realised it's really hard. So they were hacking away at his joints while these horses, because horses got tired and they couldn't get them to go. And then they pour burning sulphur. Oh, there's always burning sulphur somewhere around. I don't know where you find it. It's all those sulfur mines, you've got to make a business out of it.
This was particularly gruesome because dogs and birds would just linger around the area where the execution was being carried out, because as soon as the gun was fired, it was like a buffet had just been launched for carrion and scavengers. And one execution in 1857, they usually used sort of this fake shot that would just cause a small explosion. But one execution in 1857 saw a real shot being used and onlookers were hit with the shrapnel. And so from executing one guy, turned to, we've got to amputate this onlooker's leg, this audience member's got to lose an arm.
I think that's the world's best collateral damage.
Yeah. And the big reason it was a particularly horrible execution was because of the religious beliefs of particularly Muslims and Hindus about having to have a quick burial, and the whole body being the integrity of the body for burials. That was obviously not made very easy if people were trying to have a funeral before sundown and looking around in the dark for bits and pieces of the body that had been scattered over a wide distance. Scafism, the boats. Oh God, this is the worst. This is the Persians, the best people at coming up with execution methods. So the boats, I don't know if we've talked about this in the show before, but involved someone being stretched out on one, like a little dugout canoe thing, and another dugout canoe being sort of turned face down on top of it, like putting two halves of two turtle shells together with the head and the arms and the legs sticking out, so the body was encased inside this boat. But it would have been, they'd have been fed with milk and honey to the point where the victim would be ill and diuretic inside the boat, and they'd just be sort of left floating on a stagnant pool, so it would attract insects and vermin who'd make their way into the boat and basically eat them inside it. And it would take up to 3 weeks to die from a mix of dehydration, obviously, because they keep feeding them milk and honey, septic shock, and starvation as well.
I did. So I also heard a version where they also slather the head and arms of milk and honey. But I wondered about the 3 week thing. So you've pushed this guy out there and he's having a horrible time. And then you said they refeed them, so they've got to grow out there and then drag it back in. And we're like, number 86, come in, your time is up.
I read up some more fun Persian execution methods. King Darius, famous Persian king, had a corrupt judge called Sisamnes killed. He had his throat slit. And then he flayed him, had his skin made into leather and sewn together to make a chair, and the new judge would have to sit on the chair of his predecessor's skin to remind him not to be corrupt. First successor, Sisamnes' son.
That is brutal.
Yeah, that's pretty strong work.
But now,
Darius,
before we judge it, was the son a corrupt judge?
Right? Because
if he wasn't, then the US Supreme Court would argue it works, we should still be implementing it to this day.
I mean, really, what I'd have liked of Sisamnes to have done to him was that he should have been flayed in
Darius
his skin. Darius to do to Sisamnes is that he should have flayed Sisamnes and then turned his skin into a pair of shoes so he could say to his son, before you judge a man, walk a mile in his shoes.
Strong. And one of the most famous Persian execution methods was drowning in ashes. Have you heard of this?
No.
Oh my God. So they build, this is described in the Bible. I think it's in the Book of Maccabees, there's a description of this. There was a tower that's, from the biblical measurements, was about 23 metres tall, and it was filled with some ashes, newly burnt ashes, and some wheels. And there'd be like a little slide at the top of the tower, so you'd bring your victim up to the top of the tower, slide them into it, they'd fall down to the bottom, they'd land in the ashes, so they might break a couple of bones, but wouldn't, unlikely to die. And then they had like a handle outside the tower they could use to turn the wheels, which would excite the ashes inside the tower, so they'd fly up into the air, creating basically a layer of ash that the person couldn't breathe in, and slowly suffocate them. And it was used sort of basically for high treason as the method of execution.
That seems very labour-intensive way of killing people.
Yeah, with that, I always feel like the cruelest method of punishment when you go, you're the victim, you're going, wow, they are really putting effort into me. I must have been shit for them to want to get me this bad.
A guy has been feeding me milk and honey for weeks now.
Yes.
Famously, two of the most expensive items in the ancient
delicious
world.
Solo. Yeah. The number of bees that have died to see me dead. And ashes were used by the Acalhuans. They were sort of a contemporary tribe of the Aztecs in the 1400s. The ruler of this tribe, who was called Netzahualcoyotl in the 15th century, he used ash in the punishment of gays, like me. But they had a very strong distinction between the top and the bottom when it came to, or passive and active, as Wikipedia very tactfully puts in the article. So the active homosexual partner, the top, would be just suffocation and pile of ash, shove his face into it and suffocate him. The bottom would have their intestines pulled out to make room for some ash they were then going to pile into his body cavity, which would still be warm, slowly burning from the inside, and then they'd set his body alight on the outside as well. Which makes me feel like they've gone, if he can take a dick, we're probably going to really make it hurt for him to suffer. Yeah. I think, again, the Persians made use of tearing apart using trees. You mentioned horses to tear people apart. They would use ropes to pull the tops of two trees down into, like, a little...
Well, the classic Wile E. Coyote approach.
The Wile E. Coyote approach, yeah. Tie the guy's arms. They tie his feet down and then tie his arms to a tree, and then they'd slash the ropes holding his feet so the two trees would whang up into the air and rip him apart.
That's quite funny.
And then leave the bodies hanging, the parts of the body hanging from the two tree tops. It's, again, like a Vlad the Impaler warning to passers-by. I read about one... I'm going to go to mythology in a second, but one punishment I read about... So you know the story of Rasputin, when they tried to kill him and they kept having to... They tried to poison him in a cake and tried to poison his wine, and then tried to shoot him and then had to try and beat him and then tried to drown him, and still he seemed to be alive by the end. There was a similar sort of case where a member of the Romanov royal family, Grand Duchess Elizabeth Fyodorovna, she was not in the immediate Tsar's family, but she was sort of one of the extended Romanov family, and she was killed the day after the Tsar and his family were shot in Yekaterinburg. And she seemed a really nice person as well, by the way. She wasn't like the bloody Tsar who'd sent hundreds and millions of soldiers to die in war. She had been like... Her husband had been murdered, and she'd forgiven the guy who murdered him, become a nun, or run orphanages and hospitals. And the Bolsheviks went, you know what, I think we really need to get rid of her. So they sought her out to kill her, and they beat her, and she didn't die. And then they threw her in a pit, and she survived the fall. And then they threw a grenade into the pit. And not only did she survive, she began singing. And they threw a second grenade in to shut her up, and still she was breathing. So they threw some brushwood into the pit and set that on fire, and that eventually did for her. But as in terms of human spirit in the face of brutal execution, real kudos.
I like to think it was like football chants, heckles.
Is that the best you've got?
But yeah, I'm gonna have a quick look. I'm gonna take my worst execution, or my worst punishment rather, from mythology, the ancient Greeks. A lot of great execution and punishment methods in their myths. Prometheus's liver being eaten every evening by the eagle on Mount Elbrus. Tantalus being put into the underworld. So Tantalus was a mortal son of Zeus who stole nectar and ambrosia from the gods, and then he fed his son to them as well. So they condemned him and sent him to Hades, where he was stood in a pool under a fruit tree. But if he tried to reach up to get the fruit tree would wither and die. And if he tried to reach down for some water, the pool would dry up. So he was just left caught between never being able to eat or drink, which is where we get the word tantalizing from as well. Erisichthon was a king who wanted to have a banquet, and he wanted a really big banqueting table, so he stole trees from Demeter's grove to make a big banqueting table. And Demeter did not, funny enough, didn't care for that, and made him hungry forever. Basically, he couldn't eat enough, and eventually he ate himself from hunger. And then Sisyphus, who was a killer king, who was really mean to his own people, but Zeus only got mad when he snitched on Zeus for kidnapping a nymph. but he was, yeah, sentenced to...
you mess with your own people, but you steal one of my bitches, Zeus going to get serious.
Yeah. Classic Zeus. I got myself all dressed up as a swan.
But Sisyphus, yeah, sentenced to push a boulder up a hill in Hades, and as soon as he got to the top, would roll down the other side. Have to go down the other side and push it back up again.
Oh, it's like the ultimate office desk toy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's great. I'd love a Sisyphus boulder on my desk.
I think that's a great Simon Munnery joke, which I will credit, but I will say here is he goes, the story of Sisyphus knows nothing about erosion. Because if that was really a punishment, in the end, he would just be pushing a very small pebble in a very deep trench.
And then an Iranian would come along and just throw it at his head until he died.
But my world's worst punishment is the punishment enacted on Medusa. So Medusa, obviously terrifying, snake for hair, look at her, she'd turn you to stone, a gorgon. But she was her origin story, she was a pretty woman who Poseidon kidnapped and raped. Yeah. So she was just like an average mortal. Poseidon kidnapped her and raped her in Athena's temple. And Athena did not like that had happened. So what do you think she did? Do you think she punished Poseidon? Did she fuck? No. Athena punished Medusa for being the one that was raped in her temple.
So Athena was the ultimate feminist victim blamer.
Yeah. Oh yeah. She turned Athena's or Medusa's hair into snakes and gave her this horrendous sort of power where she would turn anyone who looked upon her into stone, basically, so no one would ever look at her and rape her again. So it makes me wonder whether Athena thought that perhaps Medusa was asking for it with normal hair.
Coming up here with your normal hair in my team.
Looking far too sexy with your normal hair. Why don't you have snake hair on, you slut?
Well, it's quite a big debate in sort of classics is whether you know, Athena was the Katie Hopkins of her day, victim blaming, or whether it was a kindness that she made it so that no man could ever come and look upon Medusa again, so that no man could ever hurt her again.
Yes.
And it's a big debate of whether she was she was ultimately protecting her from men ever hurting her. Because a woman could look at her and wouldn't be turned to stone. Because only men would be turned to stone. So there's a big debate about whether Athena was punishing her or trying to protect her in the weird, capricious way that the Greek pantheon of gods always did everything. Yeah. Which that's why I love them. If there are gods that exist, they're definitely like that.
Yeah.
Because, people, think that God would be an all-forgiving, almighty, benevolent, omniscient ruler. I think if there was something that had godly powers, that you would definitely turn yourself into a swan to have sex with. That's the kind of thing that people would do with godly powers, I think.
Can I shit in it or have sex with it? So, our candidates this week for the world's worst punishment are Ben's suggestion of death by a thousand cuts, or Ling Chi. Matt's suggestion of capital punishment as carried out today in the United States of America, or my suggestion of Athena's anti-rape protection for Medusa. I think it should be Matt's suggestion. It's nearly the most statistically well-researched answer we've ever had on the show.
Given the topic, I feel like really resistant to just go, yeah, suck it! American people are suffering!
Yeah.
Winner!
This feels
Thank
like...
you, Grigsby, Georgia, and the Supreme Court! Did it for you.
But also, because yours is the only one that's still, if you like, being carried out today. If anything, this show is going to be a campaign. We're going to be a torch song for years to come in these past 55 minutes.
And to anyone who's made it this far, I apologise. I chose this topic. I got sent a list of possible ones by Ben, which when he then recontacted me to go, we need to do research, which one of you did? I hadn't opened the Word document.
I just
so I chose something that I did no research for. This has often been my problem in my stand-up comedy career, is that my natural default setting is I would much rather be interesting than funny. Therein lies my problem, except for today.
That's our excuse. Yeah.
We'll have to get you back in 50 episodes' time to do the world's worst cuddly toy, just to really balance
this
it
one
out.
Was invented by Hitler. Yeah. Oh, God, not again.
I guarantee you there will be a Nazi teddy bear out there somewhere.
Before we go, I have some of the world's worst news of the week, and this news comes from the Mirror here in the UK. The owner of the dive bar Continental in New York's East Village is so upset by the use of the word literally that he's totally banned it from his bar, guys. A sign appeared on Twitter this week, posted in the window of this bar, which reads, "Sorry, but if you say the word literally inside Continental, you have 5 minutes to finish your drink and then you must leave. If you actually start a sentence with I literally, you must leave immediately, 3 exclamation marks. This is the most overused, annoying word in the English language and we will not tolerate it. Stop Kardashianism now." The guy who owns this bar is a guy called Trigger Smith. And he said that he really can't stand it. He literally can't stand it when people misuse the word literally. And he's also quite a bit hard on... He might, you know, refuse to serve you if you say things like, "It's all good, you know what I'm saying," and "my bad." So, I mean, I'm all for use of proper English, but I feel like...
Yeah, which I would go, "Hey, Trigger, that's not a name." I'm against people using objects as names.
I think he's...
You and Axel can fuck off.
I feel like if the fight back against bad English is to start in a dive bar in New York, we've got something wrong. So I feel like Noam Chomsky should probably be leading this fight. Before we go, Matt, where can people find out more about you and what you're doing this week?
They can find out about me on Twitter at @M_Stellingworth, because my name is too long to fit in a Twitter handle, or on Facebook or a website. But I haven't updated in a long time. I'm very bad at social media. I apologise.
Here also Matt's original world's worst. What he's worst at.
Meanwhile, we're all off to ask an Aztec whether he thinks I'm a top or a bottom. Thank you for listening to Worst Foot Forward. Goodbye.
Fire up the ashes. So well done for making it through that incredibly bloodthirsty episode Matt.
It was properly one of the most serious yet silly episodes we've done. We are recording the most intimate outro to the show ever. We are currently both huddled under Ben's duvet.
We are. We're here. I was on my own under the duvet a couple of weeks ago, and I wanted a welcome special. Well, and we're not alone either. We've got my wife's weird pregnancy pillow,
and your wife,
and my wife,
your unborn child,
and
a partridge in a pear tree,
and our mother-in-law. So we're going to keep this nice and quick because it's already getting quite hot under the duvet. That is not what I meant to say.
Is that your wife's pregnancy pillow, or have I gotten too close to you?
You leave Sandra out of this.
If you enjoyed...
Sorry, Sandra is the pregnancy pillow, not my wife. Anyway.
If you enjoyed that, do check out Matt online or go see him live and do the usual stuff with us. Find us on Twitter @WorstFoot, on Facebook WorstFootForward, or send us an email to WorstFootForward@gmail.com, or send us an email to WorstFootForwardPodcast@gmail.com. Which one is it?
One of those.
It's one of those.
Sorry, I zoned out. Also, you'll have noticed from last week, we are now on the Podnose network, so check us out there. Check out, there's about 50 other podcasts on there for you to investigate.
Yes, and thank you to Podnose, and especially George, for welcoming us. We're delighted to be part of the family on Britain's largest independent podcasting entertainment network.
Yeah, who's coming up next week, Barry?
Next week we have the excellent Felix Trench. If you don't know who Felix is, well, you're in for a treat. If you do know who he is, you'll be massively excited. He is one of the stars of the wonderful podcast sitcom Wooden Overcoats, about rival funeral homes on a Channel Island, the island of Piffling. Felix is also a history student, so we've gone down the historic route. We are going to talk about the world's worst day. Oh my days.
Yeah, we had a lot to choose from.
Yeah, yeah, only about, you know, 13 billion years worth of history to trawl through. So strap in, it's going to be quite a lengthy episode.
Yeah, join us for volume one of episode 58 next week.
Worst Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.